New military action involving Iran has the world watching closely. Was this a calculated move or a strategic surprise? How will Tehran respond? And most importantly, what does it mean for the United States and American interest? Is this a show of strength or the start of a wider conflict? We're going to break it all down with two experts on military strategy and global security. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and this is America First. Welcome to America First. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. The world is once again watching developments surrounding Iran after the latest military actions that have escalated tensions across the region. Now, the details are still continuing to unfold with every day, but the broader implications are already raising serious questions in Washington and around the globe. Now, Iran has responded with strong rhetoric and warnings of potential retaliation. While analysts debate whether this moment represents a contained operation or the beginning of a much broader and longer regional escalation. For Americans watching at home, the most important question is simple. What does this mean for us? Is this action consistent with a strong America First foreign policy, one that protects American interests while avoiding unnecessary wars? Or could it risk pulling the United States deeper into another long-term conflict in the Middle East? Now, I had to look at timing because that's another major question. Why now? What, was this really a surprise move or something that had been building behind the scenes for months? Well, we're going to break down the strategy, the risk, and what might come next. So joining me now are two experts who have been closely analyzing these developments. We have Steve Abramowitz, friend of the show and host of the Heartland Journal podcast. And for the first time making his debut, Stanislav Krapivnik, a former U.S. Army officer and geopolitical commentator. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen, on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, here's how the storyline is going, how the news cycle is happening. It's happening every 5 minutes. So let's just remember that when we're having this conversation, 5 minutes from now, the whole story could change. And so I want to start with you, Steve, on this and the big picture. What exactly happened, do you think, in these latest military actions involving Iran? And how significant are they in the broader geopolitical landscape?
Well, if you want to go broad, I think the history books say, you know, Reagan liberated 400 million in the 80s from behind the Iron Curtain, Eisenhower 80 million, Germans in World War II, and Bush Jr. about 25 million in Iraq. So Trump may get credit for 90 million from Islamic Iranian Republic, especially women and gays, from a regime he called evil. That's 600 million souls, all for Republicans, interestingly. And we can never forget, Obama gave Iran $56 billion in 2015, $1.7 billion in cash, that led to a lot of terrorism in the last 50 years.
You're right. This is not something that's been going on for that long. But Stanislav, I have to ask you, was this something analysts, you think, were expecting this conflict specifically to start? Or did this operation, do you think, catch much of the world by surprise?
Well, I will correct one thing. It wasn't Eisenhower that liberated Europe. It was the Russian army or the Red Army that liberated Europe and paid a very large price in that. It was the Red Army that took Berlin. It was my relatives, my grandparents that were in that war. As far as this, yeah, of course, this is an obvious conflict. The Israelis have been screaming about this and wanting this conflict for the last 40 years. I've seen Jerusalem Post articles, 1986. Any day now, the Iranians are going to have nuclear weapons. 40 years they've been saying that. If the Iranians wanted nuclear weapons, they could have put them on the moon by this point. The point is Khamenei put a fatwa out, no nuclear weapons. It's a weapon that's an evil weapon of mass destruction. Not only do they not have a first use doctrine like the U.S. still has, they don't have them at all because the fatwa was against using them. Khamenei has been murdered by the West. His family's been martyred during Ramadan. Ramadan martyred the black flag of jihad has gone up, and now this has become from a attack on Iran to a regional war and now to a holy war. Congratulations. It took 2 days to accomplish that. Well, and it's not going to stop easily.
Well, I think you can already see where both of you are coming from, which is good, because that's why I want to have this respectful discussion. Steve, to what Stanislav said, you know, a year ago, President Trump basically declared success that they had taken out already the ability for Iran to have any sort of nuclear capabilities with their bunker busters. Do you feel like the President Trump, what made him decide that right now was the time that he had to have this type of action? And do you think it was warranted?
I do. You can't really blame it on Ramadan. For one thing, Iran launched missiles against its Muslim neighbors who also celebrate Ramadan. Those little girls were in school because they don't even get it off like we do on Christmas or whatever, for example, on Saturdays. But as I reported on the day, Kuwait, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Qatar all got missiles lobbed at them and Saudi Arabia. Weeks earlier, they said they'd never assist us against Iran. Well, they sure did right there. So bottom line is, I think Iran's been an aggressor for a long, long time. The Houthis against Saudi Arabia, Khobar Towers against America. This was really a long time coming. And I think Trump says, in my short window of time, I'm going to change things in the Middle East. And what he's seen in Israel thus far since the Gaza campaign, it has been quiet and for the best, if you want peace in our time.
Stanislav, obviously there's been conflicts going on in that region amongst the various countries for several decades, if not since the beginning of their time. To your point, do you think you could ever actually find a diplomatic settlement for this, or is it always going to have to be military in order to get people to somewhat get along?
Look, let's look realistically at this. Iran has not, or Persia, as it was called before, has not started a war in 200 years. In fact, if I think about the last war they started was they attacked the Russian Empire in 1836, and lost. And after that, they have not started a war. This aggression came from the U.S. First of all, let's talk about those girls. The missile came from a U.S. ship, destroyed a school. I don't know how they thought it was a military base. 160 girls dead. Saturday is a work day. Let's look realistically. Not everybody has Saturday and Sunday off. In fact, Friday is the day of worship in Muslim countries. Saturday being the day of worship for Jews, they tend not to have that as a holiday. Saudi Arabia, by the way, doesn't do that either. None of those countries do. So if we're going to talk about that. The countries that Iran is lobbing missiles at is not the countries. It's lobbing missiles at the American bases in those countries. Let's begin with that. Those bases are looking and shooting at Iran across the Persian Gulf. Iran is shooting back at them, as well as shooting at Israel and well as shooting at American military forces there who started this war. They started this war without a declaration of war, again murdering the people that you were negotiating with just like 6 months ago, just like Israel has done with Hamas, with Hezbollah, including a strike in Qatar that murdered Hamas negotiators, just like the U.S. did with Milosevic in 1994, struck his residency, killed part of his family while negotiating. How can you trust the people you're negotiating with if they're trying to kill you? Let's be realistic about this. And as far as blaming Iran for killing those girls that from a missile that came from a U.S. naval ship, I mean, seriously? Talk about blaming the victim for being the victim. Well, this is as bad as when the Western media was blaming the rebels in Eastern Ukraine for shelling their own schools that they put their own children in. This is past. This is hitting the bottom of the barrel. It's the same thing as when they started turning around and blaming the victims of Epstein for being, quote, Russian honeypots. I mean, that was taking the victims, these children, and turning them into what, perpetrators? And the perpetrators into innocent victims? Turning the tables around. This is evil. I mean, this is just plain evil. 160 little girls, elementary school girls, died from a missile that came from the U.S., an American missile. Okay. Making them the victims is past the bar of evil.
So let me put this out there. Right now, there was a lot of, and I think this is frustrating on both sides, there's a lot of AI information that's getting out there, being pushed out by both sides. So trying to make sure that everything is true. To Stanislav's part, Steve, though, the Pentagon is now starting to put out comments regarding the school, saying we have heard rumors, we are investigating. And more and more, it's looking like that this is actually factually what happened. There was a girls' school that was hit, whether it was hit directly on purpose, which obviously I would hope not, but more was trying to aim for the stockpile that was supposedly next door. Those are the details that are going to be sorted out. Steve, what do you say to people that are making the same points that Stanislav is saying, that this a girls' school was what started this entire conflict, and that being hit that killed a large group of young girls in a school?
I think that's a tragedy. I think it's terrible. We do not know if it was a misfire by Iran or if it was targeted by America, which I'd be surprised. That's usually not the way we operate, but accidents do happen. Well, we have to remember that Iran used all that money that Biden gave him and Obama gave them for terrorism and the proxy wars and terrorism. And they didn't care much about who they were. And one of their missiles that was fired this weekend hit a hotel in Qatar, which is a friend of theirs. So we can't really say that there's any kind of moral equivalency between what's going on here. What they did was they targeted 60 of the top Islamic Republican soldier, let's just say military, to cut off the head of the snake that was repressing their people for 47 years. Everything from hanging teenage girls for being raped, that was their crime. And now all of a sudden they're saying, oh, Big Bad West killed some children in our schools. Yeah, maybe, I'm sorry, but that is not what the war's intention was. That was not the mission.
On that side, well, real quick, before we go to a quick break, I've got to ask you, Stanislav, on this, the timing about this. Because when we come back, we're going to talk about the Americans' role into it and the future of it. But I have to ask you about the timing of this. You know, we just had the Board of Peace meet last week. Netanyahu was in the week before. Do you think those were factors that could have influenced the decision to act at this exact moment in time?
Yeah, the Board of War got its first war. Board of Peace, I'm sorry, got its first war. Let's look at it realistically. Netanyahu, seven times in the White House. This is some kind of record or anti-record. Seven times in the White House in 1 year, foreign leader comes in there right before this attack. The donor class has been pushing for this war for 40 years. They've been screaming the same thing. Any day now, Iran is going to have a nuclear weapon. So where is it? 40 years. The same place that Saddam Hussein hid his weapons of mass destruction, or maybe Gaddafi hid his weapons of mass destruction. Where are they? The same lies get repeated over and over, driving American soldiers into harm's way for foreign nations, for a foreign policy that doesn't do anything, by the way, for America. Let's be honest about it.
Well, that
I served 11 years in the U.S. military, and how many of my friends went off and are off on these missions that had zero to do with American foreign policy, if it was American foreign policy? That's the problem. The same person, by the way, Netanyahu, who's the star witness in Congress to get the U.S. into where? Iraq. $7 trillion sunk into Iraq, a country destroyed, millions killed. And by the way, that's now shooting at American soldiers because it's been asking them to leave for 10 years and they won't leave.
Okay.
There is no American first policy here. This is strictly Israel first or anybody else first, but not America first, and never has been.
Well, Stanislav, you have given me a great softball roll into our next segment, but we got to take a quick break. So stay with us, Steve and Stanislav, as we continue. Because when we come back, the question that every American is asking, does this move actually strengthen Americans' position in the world, or does it risk the United States into another conflict in the Middle East? We're going to ask our experts whether this fits within the framework of President Trump's America First foreign policy when we come back. Welcome back to America First. Tonight, we are actually breaking down the latest military developments, which involve Iran, Israel, and what they mean for American security and global stability. Joining me are geopolitical analyst Steve Abramowitz and former U.S. Army officer Stanislav Kropivnik. Let's get right back into it. Steve, I got to get you to push back on some things here, because I know that you were a Trump supporter. You are a Trump supporter in America First. But I have to say, you got to see the divide that's happening amongst his base right now. They're trying to understand, and definitely with the announcements that we have taken a grave turn, and there are going to be American soldiers returning in boxes with flag-draped coffins. That's not necessarily good for President Trump. So help me out here, Steve. How is President Trump doing in selling this to the American public right now? And do you think he's going to continue, that it's in America's best interest to put more boots on the ground?
War is always a terrible thing. We are a long way away from boots on the ground. But first of all, saying it's an illegal war is a misnomer. Obama did it 7 times. It's the Article 2 authority. 2011, he killed Osama bin Laden in Pakistan, used Article 51, which is the charter of the UN. That is self-defense. Don't like it? Okay, fine. But saying it's illegal is just wrong. Not to, in 1973, we used the War Powers Act. It's been that since 1942 was the last time that we actually had Congress do this. So he's liberating oppressed people from Iran, at least in his mind, at least that's the rhetoric that I've heard him talk about. So in DC, where they are protesting this, in LA, where the largest enclave of Iranians live in America, they're out dancing in the streets, just like in Tehran, they're doing the Trump dance. So my impression is that he is actually winning hearts and minds for freedom, more so than he is making people on the left mad who will look at anything that Trump does as the objection.
Yes, but Steve, I got to push back here on the stroke because the people that he's making happy on his side are Jeb Bush, Lindsey Graham, normal ones that you and I can agree are not who you want to have on your side as a Republican. And you're looking at the more conservative wing, I'm saying, and it's hard to even say conservative wing, the anti-neocon wing of the Republican Party are going, I don't know if this is exactly what we need to be doing right now, especially considering we do have Venezuela. Just last week, we were talking about Mexico and all the issues in Mexico. So, you know, at this stage.
But I'm not actually. I'm giving him credit right. for the people in the street in okay. L.A. who were born in the Russian during the Iranian Revolution, who are dancing as liberated, like-minded family members.
Right.
This is fantastic for them. I don't care what Lindsey Graham has to say. I don't care how much Raytheon or Boeing is going to make on the Patriot missile program. I care about the Cuban dissidents, the Venezuelan dissidents, the Mexican dissidents, and the people of Iran who say, for the first time in our lifetime, we can actually take off our hijabs and dance.
Yet. We have not figured out that's actually going to completely happen. Stanislav, to his point on that side, you do have, even though the latest poll from Reuters says 1 out of every 4 Americans are not for the attacks that are happening, the American involvement in Iran, you do have large crowds of the United States of Iranian population that have sought refugee status here in the U.S. who are happy to them. What do you tell them right now who are thinking maybe that they actually get to see their family members again and they might actually be able to return and visit their homeland that they fled from over the last 30 years? You do have a very large Iranian-American population that are very happy with the moves of President Trump.
Look, first of all, as far as hijabs, one needs to look on YouTube and go type in Market Walk, Tehran, any of these types, and you can see that most of the women don't have their heads covered up. There's been a lot of liberalism moved into the system. That's to begin with. Second of all, let's go through what happened with Iran. Iran was a republic that decided, oh, the oil we have is our oil. So what happens? The U.S. and the British overthrow it, install an autocratic regime with the death squads, police state to control the population, and then give over the oil companies back to American and British oil, or the oil resources back to American and British oil companies. The people that ran because there was a revolution, a popular revolution. Though the Ayatollahs came to power, let's remember that there were a mass number of parties that went into this revolution to overthrow the Shah. The Shah was extremely unpopular, except for a small percentage of population, which, by the way, are now dancing in the streets as little girls, Iranian girls, are being killed. And the son of the Shah says his heart goes out to the dead American soldiers, but doesn't go out to the dead Iranian children. But he already said that when he gets back, he's going to exterminate the Kurds because he'll give the oil companies to the American, or the oil assets to the American companies, and he's going to have a free hand to kill the Kurds, which are being used by the U.S. I love these guys. They tell their truth. They're not smart enough to keep their mouths shut when they're telling you what they're planning on doing. So look, the majority of the people in Iran, first of all, let's begin with this. Iran and the internal workings of Iran is none of America's business. Let's go back to the founding fathers of America, the Federalist Papers, the founding fathers, the Constitution. None of it was, let's go out and be crusaders across the world. Quite the opposite. What did Washington say? No entangling alliances. Stay out of the trade with the rest of the world? Sure. It's not isolation. It's to trade with the rest of the world. Go in there and try to change their governments, change their societies. That's not America's business. That's not what American children are born for, to go die. In fact, most of the people that wind up dying are either from the South or the Midwest, while we're at it, while the Northeastern intellectuals start these wars. This is not America's war. It is now, of course, because Trump started it. And he started a holy war by killing the number two person in Shia faith. And while we're looking at it, let's look at these what happens to America's safety or clout in the world. One, the U.S. has shown that it can't protect its allies. The U.S. anti-aircraft systems are incapable of stopping Iranian, even old Iranian drones. She had first-generation drones that on radar stations.
Okay, well,
we already see that the U.S. can't protect its allies. It's failed there. And on top of that...
Well, and Stanislav, you're breaking up, so I want to throw this back over to Steve to kind of respond back to what you're saying on this, because you are making some good points. You're looking back at history. There is definitely be. But let me just point out, President Trump is still the president of the United States, so whatever he decides to do, guess what? It becomes an American issue. Steve, on this side, are you not worried? And you are seeing, you've already seen comments coming out of leadership out of Saudi Arabia saying, America's already stretched too thin trying to protect, you know, our other allies. We're kind of, obviously, Dubai is getting hit. Our country is getting hit. We're kind of fending for ourselves. Are you not worried right now that between all the various areas in just even the last 2 months that President Trump has, that has got himself involved in, are you not worried that we've kind of stretched ourselves too thin as America? And how is President Trump going? What is the end game for this, that he comes out looking like a winner and can and make peace in this region?
Well, we did get Turkey to sign on. And by the way, I do want to say I respect Stanislav's opinion very much. I want to thank him for his service. But Washington was a long time ago, and we haven't taken his advice in 100 years. You know, Iran is experiencing one of the world's fastest growing evangelical Christian movements. Some were suggest like it was 500 converts in 1979 to over a million this year. That's a death sentence, yeah, Muslim life. So God bless them. They're free to worship now. So there's that. And I actually think the biggest beneficiaries of cutting the head off the Islamic Republic snake are women. Pre-revolution women were treated with respect until Khomeini took over 50 years ago. The people called him Ali, meaning rat. Gay people too, killed and tortured. Maybe now they have a chance at a decent life. And it just goes to show, I understand your point, but if you get the USS Ford and 75 aircraft, 16 warships, 45 to 50% of our air power in the Gulf and out of range, means you're not stopping America. Trump can do it as he pleases, just like in one day he was able to cut the head off the snake in Venezuela, a narco-terror state. That's his goal. He is using the War Powers Act. He's using the War on Terror. He's using Pete Hegseth as a Department of War, and they are going to leave the world a better place than when they found it. History is being written as we speak.
You know, that's very good, I think, very diplomatic of an answer of you. And you always do that very well, Steve. But Stanislav, I want your response to that. And I also want you to talk about how, and he's right, it was pre the Shah, it was amazing to be in Iran, especially as a female. There was a lot there on the cutting edge of so much medical, of entertainment, et cetera. But Stanislav, they're about to, you know, it looks like the U.S. or some in the U.S. are trying to put the Shah's son, who has been residing there outside of Washington, D.C. for the last several decades, they want to put him back as in power, basically, I think we can all agree, as a puppet to kind of just mouth whatever the U.S. tells them to do. I want you to respond back to what Steve said and then kind of talk about what is it really doing much good if you're going to put the Shah's son back in power, basically putting that same family back in power that caused these issues decades ago?
Well, before I go on that point, let's talk about how the U.S., three revolutions and decapitation strikes and everything else has improved the lives of people in Libya, Iraq, Yugoslavia. Should we keep going down that list? How many people died? How broken were those countries? Afghanistan? How much money was spent? The U.S. spent somewhere between $7 to $9 trillion between Iraq and Afghanistan. Oh, by the way, Al-Qaeda and IGIL are now in Afghanistan. They weren't there earlier. Look, all of these, let's build a new nation, has been a failure. As far as Iran goes, maybe it was great for some. But since the majority of the population came out and overthrew the government, I guess they didn't agree with how great things were. That's kind of what happens when the majority of the people come over there and decide they want to do a different government. It's not our position to tell them, no, you can't do that. You have to live the way we want you to live. They live the way they want to live. It's their choice. That's what reality of sovereignty is. Right now, the U.S. is doing bombing campaigns in Iran. Tehran, they're reporting up to 500 people killed on strikes all over the place. What exactly is trying to be accomplished here? But the point is several American allies may not be around by the time this is over because they have Shia majority or very large minorities that are now rebelling because guess what? We've reached the holy war. That's great. It only took 2 days.
Right. Well, let me just say, you're right. The U.S. does not have a great track record in these other countries that you mentioned. We've spent millions to billions of dollars, lost lots of American lives in those areas. And what do we have to show for it? Still conflict. That being said, President Trump was not in office at that point. So let's hope that we've seen him work miracles before. Let's hope that maybe this might be another one. Thank you, Steve Abramowitz and Stanislav Kropovitch. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll continue this conversation because we know this is not going to be a short-term issue.
Thank you.
Definitely not.
You know, moments like what we're living in right now remind us just how quickly tensions in the Middle East can shift. And how important it is for American leadership to carefully weigh every single move. As was pointed out, for decades, the United States has faced the challenge of confronting hostile regimes while also avoiding the trap of endless military entanglements. Supporters of strong action argue that deterrence keeps adversaries in check. Critics warn that even limited strikes can spiral into wider conflicts. The question at the heart of this conversation is one that Americans have debated for years. What does strength look like in an American first foreign policy? Is it decisive action that shows adversaries we will defend our interest? Or is it restraint that keeps America from being drawn into conflicts that don't directly threaten our homeland? The coming days and Iran's response is likely going to give us a clearer picture of where this situation is heading. But one thing is certain, the world is watching, and so are we. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and this is America First. Thank you for joining us.